Chapter 17. It began with a day like no other. In all the history of Caliban, in the annals of the knightly orders, in the folk tales of the common people, there would never be another day like it. There would be other momentous days, it was true. There would be darker days ahead as part of an era of death and destruction. But this day was different. This was a day of joy. It was a day of happiness and excitement. A day of hope. It was the day the Emperor descended from the heavens. It would become known as the beginning of the time of angels. At this moment, though, that name was unknown. Giants, Astartes, First Legion, all these names would be used to refer to the newcomers. But as the day of the Emperor's descent dawned, the people of Caliban resorted to a name with mythic resonance. They called them Terrans once more. It was a good name, for it spoke of humanity's lost birthright and the origin of the first settlers who had come to Caliban. For 200 generations, ever since the fall of Old Night, stories of ancient terror had been told around the hearth fires of Caliban. Now, those stories were real. They had been given visceral form in the armored shapes of giants. The moment of discovery, the moment when the Astartes made first contact with the people of Caliban, was already being mythologized. A vast tree of myth would sprout from the tiny seed of real experience. There would be different stories and competing legends. All too soon, the truth of how it actually happened would be forgotten. But Zahariel knew he would never forget the truth of that day, for he had been in the deep forest with Lionel Johnson and Luther when it had occurred. That Luther had been the first to call them angels was true. But the Astartes had descended on pinions of fiery wings. It was a phrase uttered in the heat of the moment, provoked by wonder and amazement, but Johnson had remembered his words and kept them close to his heart. Zahariel and the others in the riding party were already being pushed to obscurity, the story needing grander players than them to tell such lofty histories. In time, his name and deeds would be lost, and though his part in the story would soon be pushed aside in the countless retellings, he was not saddened, for he knew that the story was what mattered, not the players who stalked in its background. In any event, the truth of the tale hardly mattered. The people of Caliban wanted stories. They needed them. So much was changing in so short a period that they felt the need to be anchored back to reality. Zahariel knew that stories helped them to make sense of their lives. Of course, there would be dozens of different stories, all claiming to be the truth, but in some ways that made his exclusion easier. With so many versions of what had happened that day, each person could pick the one that suited them best. Some would be ribald, others reverential, some full of adventure, and others more prosaic. All would agree on one matter, however. The name of this tale would remain the same. From the far northern mountains to the great oceans of the south, no matter the variation within the narrative, it would always be known by the same title. It would be known as The Descent of Angels. Following the arrival of the angels, wonders and miracles had been shared by those who had come from the stars, but greater even than those was news that the creator of the angels, the Emperor, would descend in all his glory. In the wake of his arrival, nothing on Caliban would ever be the same. Zahariel watched the tens of thousands of people as they filled the mighty arena, cleared before the walls of the Order's fortress monastery. He had never seen such an assemblage of people in one place, and the presence of so many gathered in joy was like a roaring pressure in his head. Come to think of it, he had never seen such a vast open space before, the vistas of Caliban being primarily unbroken swathes of forest, but the machines of the Mechanicum had been thorough in their destructive creativity. The enormous metal behemoths had rolled across the landscape, slicing down trees and stripping away their branches. Those same machines then swept across the land they had cleared once more, this time uprooting tree stumps and levelling the ground, until the whole area was as smooth as the flat of a blade. The tree logs left over from the process were deposited in immense stacks by the side of the newly created clearing to be used as lumber, while the roots and branches were reduced to wood chip to be burned in massive bonfires. It had been almost apocalyptic, the smoke, the red glow of the fires, and the great metal machines, so large as to be monstrous. Looking at them, Zahariel was put in mind of the great beasts of Caliban, though those monsters had been hunted to extinction. Zachariel could hardly believe the good fortune that saw him here on this day of days, for the entire strength of the order was assembled here, as well as senior knights from those knightly orders that had been gathered together under the banner of the Astartes. He recalled the words of the hooded men in the room beneath the circle chamber, and shivered, despite the heat of the day. He had not seen Nemiel this morning, and he was glad, for he was still angry that his cousin had dragged him to that dangerous conclave of rancorous malcontents. To see such martial power gathered in one place was humbling, for though the knights of Caliban were strong and proud, they were as striplings compared to the might of the Astartes. Towering giants, the Astartes were golems of men, though to call them men seemed a gross disservice, so removed were they from any common humanity. They soared above Zachariel, their armour burnished black and gleaming, and their voices so gruff and deep that it seemed wholly unnatural that they issue from human mouths. Even without their armour, they were enormous, more so, for while encased in plate, Zachariel could almost believe that the majority of their bulk was artificial. Seeing them without their armour, such doubts were removed. Midris had been the first of the Astartes to be seen without his armour, his body massive and lumpen, his flesh packed with too much muscle and hard bone as to be almost without shape or definition. Robed in a simple cream body sheath, Midris had arms and legs like the great trees of the North Wilds, and the muscles of his shoulders rose to either side of his cranium without apparent recourse to a neck. One Astartes was impressive enough, but over 1,000 of them filled the great space, surrounding it like great black statues, and hundreds more ringed the great amphitheatre at the centre of the plain that had been bulldozed flat by the Mechanicum. Today was the day the Emperor would descend to Caliban, and Zachariel could barely contain his excitement. Nemiel would be jealous of Zahariel's inclusion in the Lion's Honour Guard, but such was the lot of their friendship and rivalry. His armour was polished to a reflective sheen, its ancient technologies hardly the equal of the Astartes' mighty armour, but on this day of days such differences hardly mattered. The angle of the ground and the press of bodies around him as he marched through the crowd prevented him from seeing the lion, but Zachariel knew the Grand Master of the Order was ahead of him without being able to lay eyes upon him. Cheers and adoring faces pointed the way to the lion as surely as an illuminated sign, and though it was unusual for their taciturn leader to walk amongst the common folk of Caliban, Luther had suggested it as a means of ensuring that the Emperor knew he was a man of the people, that he was loved by all. An excited hubbub filled the air, for who would not want to see a being of such magnificence that he could command the likes of the Astartes and inspire such devotion in them? A being with the vision, drive and power to set out on the reconquest of the galaxy was surely to be revered, and perhaps even feared, for what singular purpose of violence must surely lie at his heart. The thought had risen in Zahariel's mind unbidden, and he recalled again the secret meeting of last night. His expression turned grim as he thought of the sentiments espoused there, but he satisfied himself with knowing that he had forestalled the seditious talk of the warriors gathered in the deep vaults of the fortress monastery with his threat of exposure to the lion. Seeing his gleaming armour, the crowds parted before him, and he nodded in appreciation at the respect accorded to his status as a knight of the order. The sense of fevered anticipation among the people of the crowd was palpable, and their excitement passed to him so easily that it was like an electric charge running around his body. All here gathered knew they were witnesses to history, the passage of which only rarely allowed the ordinary man the chance to witness its unfolding. At last he reached the outer circle of knights surrounding the lion, and Zachariel felt his pulse increase as he stepped towards his fellows. Though much younger than most of them, they parted respectfully before him, allowing him to pass into the clear space between the outer and inner circles. The senior masters of the order gathered like supplicants around the lion, their bearing regal and majestic, but still as children compared to the mighty warrior at their centre. Zachariel had no doubt that Lionel Johnson was the single most gifted and remarkable human being who had ever lived. Each time he looked at the lion, he felt exactly the same sensation, a sheer mass of presence that seemed to press inside his skull by some mystical osmosis to create a feeling of well-being and trust. More than that, he felt something else entirely. Awe. He felt awe. The lion was a truly imposing physical specimen. A giant, standing at a little under 3 meters tall, it was impossible to escape the suspicion that he had been cut from a broader canvas than the majority of men. His body was perfectly proportioned and entirely in scale with his height. He was powerfully built, lithe, yet muscular. Given that the people of Caliban had black hair for the most part, the lion's most arresting feature at first sight was the russet golden shade of his hair. The combined effect of his physical characteristics paled into inconsequence, however, in comparison with his more intangible qualities. Johnson exuded a raw majesty, an unspoken aura of such magnetic authority that it was clear from the very first instance why Sir Luther had chosen to give him the name Lion. There was no other name that could ever have possibly fitted him. He was the Lion. No word could have better described him. As Zahariel approached, the Lion turned to him and gave a brief nod of his head, an unspoken acknowledgement of the brotherhood they shared. Zahariel greeted his companions, knights who in years past had been distant, unreachable figures of authority and might. Now they were his brothers, by virtue and by valour. His past life of insignificance was over. His new life as a member of the Order had begun in blood and would no doubt end the same way. "At last we are assembled. We can go," said Lord Cypher, a note of impatience audible in his powerful tones.
"There's no rush," said the Lion, his voice deeply musical and filled with sonorous tones that seemed to seep beneath a listener's skin and thrill the nerve endings below. The Emperor is not yet arrived."
"Nevertheless, we should be ready," said Lord Cypher. "The proper traditions and protocols must be followed as always, now more than ever in these times of change."
Zahariel smiled at the fresh tones of this new Lord Cypher and caught an amused glance from the tall, powerful warrior who stood next to the Lion. Sir Luther had been Johnson's boon companion and closest brother in all things since the day he had discovered the feral wild man in the forest. A great man, Luther was still dwarfed by the lion's stature, but his broad shoulders and open face were those of a man who bore no ill feelings to his mightier brother.
"Ready?" asked Luther. "I have a feeling this might be an interesting day."
"Interesting," said Zahariel. "Let's hope not too interesting."
"What do you mean?" asked Luther.
"Nothing," replied Zahariel. "Just making conversation."
Luther looked askance at him, sensing there was more to his comment than he was letting on, but content to allow him his secrets.
"Come," said Lord Cypher. "It is time."
Zahariel looked into the sky, seeing a dim glow building behind the clouds. An excited ripple spread through the crowd as heads turned to the skies. Only the Astartes encircling the mighty arena kept their gaze resolutely fixed on the crowd, and Zahariel had the distinct impression that they were looking for someone, or something. Even on a planet that had welcomed the coming of the Astartes and the Emperor, these warriors never relaxed their guard and never flinched from their duty, and Zahariel was filled with admiration for the great warriors from beyond the stars. His musings were interrupted as the Lion set off towards the amphitheatre at the centre of the cleared space, a twin line of knights holding open a path through the cheering crowds. Zahariel almost missed step with the warriors around him, but recovered well enough for no one to notice his momentary hesitation. Faces surrounded him, the people of Caliban, wild and ecstatic to have been reunited with their ancestral brothers, the root race of their culture, and brightly coloured banners flew above their heads. They had lived in fear of the beasts for too long, and of the wars between the knightly orders and the countless other dangers that could part a man from his life, but now they had something to look forward to. An age of peace and prosperity beckoned, for what could the technology and resources of the Imperium not achieve? With such tools available, and such men to wield them, what undreamt of glories might be attained? His mind filled with such heady thoughts that Zahariel almost missed the sudden vertiginous sense of cold purpose that slithered down his spine. Dread suddenly seized him, for no reason that he could explain, until he saw the face that stood apart from the expressions of hope and wonder in the crowd. The man stood out by virtue of the seriousness etched into his face, the intent written in every line and crease of his skin. His eyes were fixed on the marching honour guard, and even amid a sea of cheering faces, Zahariel could pick out the man's face as he kept pace with them towards the arena. There was something familiar to the cast of his features, but the memory of how he knew them eluded Zahariel, until a shadow fell across the man's face, and he recognised the hawkish nose and prominent chin. The question of how the man was able to move through the crowd with such ease was answered when Zahariel caught a glint of armour beneath a plain woollen cloak, and suddenly he knew where he had seen the man before. He remembered the vaulted room beneath the circle chamber, the lanterns at the compass points,
and a hooded confraternity of flagitious discussion. Hooded surplices had been worn, but enough light had lit the interior of one hood to illuminate a face that moved with sinister purpose towards the great podium where the lion and the emperor would meet face to face. Thoughts tumbled through his mind like a body in a torrential river that bounced from the rocks as it was carried towards a roaring waterfall. Fear rose in him as he realized that his words to Nemuel had clearly not been as convincing as he had thought, that the warriors gathered in the depths of the fortress had not been as swayed by his threats of exposure as he had supposed. He turned to issue a warning, but the words were stillborn in his throat, and he realized that he and Nemuel would be implicated in whatever mischief this man had in mind. Who would believe that their presence had been innocent, that he had been lured with promises of open discussion on the future of Caliban? Zahariel felt a suffocating fear rise in his gullet and a hot rush of nausea settle in his belly as he realized with utter certainty that something terrible was soon to happen. Caught twixt guilt and fear, he made a bold decision and broke step with his brothers. Surprised gasps greeted his departure from the honor guard, and he felt Lord Cypher's angry glare on his back as he marched with grim purpose towards the line of knights holding back the crowds. Each warrior wore an enclosing helmet and hooded surplice, but Zahariel could feel their surprise and shock in their sudden stiffening of pose. They parted before him, not knowing what else to do, and Zahariel scanned the faces and heads of the crowd as he pushed his way deeper through the mass of bodies. For a terrible moment he thought his quarry had evaded him, but caught the purposeful glide of the man's head, moving against the direction of the crowd's adoration. Zahariel made his way forwards, one hand pushing people out of his way, the other gripping his sword hilt. A rush of emotions flooded him, a potent mix of fear and betrayal. Didn't this traitor realize the magnitude of what he planned? Didn't he see the ultimate folly of his course? As the distance closed, it seemed as though his target became aware of him. A hurried glance over his shoulder, and their eyes met over the bobbing, smiling faces of the crowd. A light built in the heavens, and heads were turned upwards in joy and rapture. But Zahariel had no time for such sights, his attention fixed on the man before him. Though he moved with purpose, his posture was stooped, as though he bore some great weight, and his pace was slower, much slower than Zahariel's. Aware of his discovery, the man pushed harder in an attempt to evade Zahariel, but as the crowd surged in response to the building light in the heavens, his passage was impeded to the point where forward movement was next to impossible. Zahariel saw his chance and pushed through the press of bodies, sparing no thought to the damage he was doing as he cleared a path with fists and shoulders. Angry voices berated him, but he ignored them, too intent on his prey. The man tried to force a path through the crowd, but alerted to the presence of troublemakers in their midst, the people gelled before him, becoming an impenetrable barrier of angry faces and raised voices. Zahariel reached out and grabbed a handful of the man's cloak, turning him around and pulling him off balance. The light above him built, bathing everything in a golden glow, and it seemed as though a great searing spotlight was trained upon them.
"Get away from me!"
howled the man, his cloak pulled aside, to reveal the shimmering glow of light upon his breastplate. As Zahariel feared, the man was a knight of the Order.
"I won't let you do this," said Zahariel, sending a thunderous left hook into the man's face. He fell back, but the press of the crowd prevented him from falling.
"You don't understand," said the man, struggling in Zahariel's grip.
The crowd pulled away from them, and Zahariel pushed closer to the man, pressed chest to chest with his adversary as they grappled.
"It has to be this way!"
The man was broader and taller than Zahariel, older and more experienced, but his discovery had robbed him of conviction. He tried to turn away from Zahariel, tearing the cloak from his shoulders as he did so. Zahariel saw that the man carried a canvas satchel across his back that clearly bore some considerable weight. Hampered by his burden, the knight could not fight as effectively as Zahariel, despite the clear difference in age and experience. Zahariel threw another punch at the man's face, breaking his nose and sending a squirt of blood in a high arc. More cries of alarm circled them, and Zahariel followed his punch by hooking his leg behind that of his opponent and slamming a shoulder into his chest. The stricken knight fell, dragging Zahariel with him as they crashed to the ground, clawing and punching at one another. The satchel tore at the sudden movement of the heavy weight within, and six discs of bare, matte-finished metal clattered onto the ground. They were simple in appearance, each no more than 30 centimetres across, a few centimetres thick, and equipped with a rubberized grip on one face. Though he did not know what they were called,
He had learned enough in his time with the instructors of the Imperium to know that the pictographic symbols on their faces denoted explosives. Zahariel's elbow hammered the knight's jaw as they hit the ground, and he followed up the blow with a cracking right cross to the cheek.
"It's over!" he yelled. "It was just talk! You were to stay your hand!"
His opponent could not reply, his face a wreckage of blood and broken bone, illuminated by the golden glow from the heavens. Even through the damage, his eyes widened in amazement, wet with tears. Despite himself, Zahariel turned his head to see what might provoke such wonder in one so wounded, and his mouth fell open and slack as he saw a great floating city descending from the heavens. Like a mountainous spire shorn from the side of some basalt landmass, the city was studded with light and colour, its dimensions enormous beyond imagining. A great eagle-winged prow of gold marked one end of the floating city, and towering battlements, like the highest towers of the mightiest citadel, flared like gnarled stalagmites from the other. His opponent struggled weakly beneath him, but their fight was forgotten as the crowd turned its full attention on the mighty vessel above them and the flock of smaller airships that surrounded it as it descended in fire and light. Mighty winds whipped around the surface of the planet, whatever means the great spire utilized to stay aloft, generating a terrifying, exhilarating downdraft of force. Shadows played over him, and he looked up to see the broad outline of a giant standing over him, its bulk massive and threatening. Astartes. Though no outward change had been manifested in the appearance of the Astartes warrior, Zahariel suddenly felt an overwhelming terror engulf him at the sheer physical threat. Where before the Astartes had been benign giants, albeit with a clear potential for great violence, this potential was now unbound. A gauntlet seized his throat and yanked him from his opponent. His feet dangled, and his throat ceased to draw air as the pressure on his neck increased. The power in the Astartes was immense, and Zahariel knew that with a tiny fraction of movement, his neck would be snapped like kindling. Through graying vision, Zahariel saw yet more of the Astartes warriors as they unceremoniously scooped up his fallen opponent.
"What do you have, Midris?" asked one of the newly arrived giants.
The warrior looked straight into his eyes, and Zahariel felt the fury of the warrior's hatred burning through the red lenses of his helmet as consciousness faded to blackness.
"Traitors!" spat Midris.